Hi again, everyone. Thanks for joining us on this sunny afternoon. This is the last of the series of webinars from the Research Services team at the British Library. I'm Dominic Walker, the Scholarly Communications Lead. The webinar this afternoon will actually be presented by Frances Madden, who is our Research Identifiers Lead, and she'll run through some of the latest developments in the EC-funded Freya project. It will be about 20 minutes, and then we'll have some time for questions at the end, if there are any. If you do have questions along the way, please use the question box and we'll come to them at the end. And if we don't have time to get back to you, we'll try and get back to you by email. As with all the webinars we run, this is being recorded and we will circulate the link to all attendees afterwards. And if you missed our previous webinars, we'll provide a link to those as well. We ran a webinar on open access, research data, and our shared repository, which you might be interested in. But without further ado, I'll now hand over to Frances, who will take it from here.
Thanks, Dom. So thank you everyone for joining. My name is Frances Madden, as Dom said, and I'm the Research Identifiers Lead here at the British Library. And I work on the Freya project, which is a European Commission funded project about persistent identifiers. So what Freya aims to do is to build and extend the infrastructure for persistent identifiers as a key part of open science. Some of the ways in which we're doing that is through improved discovery and access of research data, developing new types of persistent identifiers, and demonstrating disciplinary PID systems as well, and also integrating our services with the EOSC. There are many partners involved in the Freya project. It's coordinated by STFC, also based in the UK, but many others from around Europe, and focusing both on different disciplines. So the British Library represents the humanities and social sciences within Freya, but also persistent identifier service providers and publishers. So we like to think of Freya as having three pillars. The PID graph, I'll talk a bit more about, but we also have the concept of the PID forum, which now has a dedicated online presence, which I'll mention again later on. And the idea is that we generate the requirements which are fed into the PID graph, and then the services are consolidated and made sustainable through the PID Commons. But as I said, I'll be talking a lot more about two of these pillars particularly as we go on. So first of all, I wanted to talk about the concept of the PID graph. So it's a conceptual model, I suppose, of linking research objects together or research entities together. And one useful way of thinking about it is that this diagram, I hope, wouldn't look too an alien to any of you within this audience. So we have this researcher who has written some publications. They've also created some research data. For one of the publications, they use some software that had been created by someone else, and they've got they're receiving funding from one organization, and then they're also affiliated with another organization, perhaps a university. So if you like, we can think about this diagram as being a type of graph, so not a visualization graph, but more in a network sense. So sort of similar to, you know, social networks, for example, where you've got, you know, it's built on the relationships of, you know, who knows who and who created what. So this is a slightly expanded version of the same graph, where we've got a few more authors, we've got some same publications, data sets, etc. And these all of these entities can have different types of persistent identifiers. And what Freya is about is trying to connect all of these entities together and be able to discover these connections and these relationships and answer interesting questions, which it's difficult to do, not at present, but prior to Freya. And the services that we've developed. I should have mentioned at the start actually that Freya is a 36-month project. It's due to end at the end of November this year. So some of you I think may have heard me speak about Freya before, but on this occasion we've got some new things to hopefully update you on as well. So as I mentioned, we're trying to go from these disconnected silos to this using persistent identifiers. So where they're all these different silos of information across different systems are connected together. So be that from different persistent identifier service providers, but also, you know, within our systems internally, such as CRIS systems, for example, repositories, et cetera. So connecting them all together using persistent identifiers. And why persistent identifiers? We feel that persistent identifiers are particularly good at doing this and connecting research outputs because they're unique and they're persistent, and they can be used for reliable connections as opposed to, you know, which some other approaches might not necessarily have. And we have a lot of this functionality already, but I think perhaps it's not necessarily being used so much. So I think one thing that it's really important to that I'd like to be taken away from this webinar is the importance of sort of good metadata and rich metadata, as you know, being very beneficial in generating this network and graph. So then the PID graph. So we have these, so this is sort of a bit of an abstract concept to try and explain. But the idea behind the PID graph is that it allows us to identify relationships that are at a remove. So they're not, you know, that aren't direct relationships. So as you can see, we know that A is connected to B, and we know that B is connected to C from the metadata. By using the PID graph, we can find out that A is connected to C. So for example, well, actually, I'm going to just, no, I won't do that now, sorry. So for example, if A is an article, and then B is a person with an ORCID ID, and C is another article, we can find out that A is connected to C. For example, that the two articles are written by the same person, which isn't, you know, you wouldn't know that by just looking at the metadata associated with A. So we focused primarily on these relationships at that level of remove. And the reason for that is we did an awful lot of work a couple of years ago at this point in 2018, identifying user stories. So identifying what people were looking to do with PIDs and what sort of questions did they want to answer. And we realized that a lot of them are of this sort of level of remove. So we collated all of these user stories in a standard way. As you can read on screen, one of the examples was, you know, as a researcher, I want to discover data by an instrument mentioned in a paper I just read because that data may be useful in my research. So we had about 60 of them, I think, in total, and we've been working on addressing as many of these as we can. So here are some other examples of things that we should be able to find out through the PID graph. So the co-authors of a given researcher. So the way we can do that is we have a person and we have their ORCID ID, and then we can look at all of the DOIs that were provided by Crossref and DataCite, which have that ORCID ID associated with them as an author. And then we can look at all the other ORCID IDs that are present in those works, and therefore we can find out those co-authors. So that's one example. Another one is show all data sets funded by the European Commission that have been cited in journal articles. So again, taking the funder ID for the European Commission, looking at all the data sets that mention that funder ID in the metadata, and then looking at the publications which are related to those data sets as well. And that way we can work that one out. This is an example of Freya. So Freya is the yellow dot in the center, and we can see here that we've got two data sets, which are the red dots at the top. And they are all associated with, there are two data sets that are associated with the grant ID and the metadata. And then we also have the blue dots are the publications and the green dots are the researchers. So you can see how you've got, you know, the data sets, you've got have several co-authors who are similar. You can see there's several green dots that are connected with both of the red. And you can also see several publications coming out from there as well. So we're trying to build all these relationships together. This particular image was created using a Jupyter notebook. So we have various Jupyter notebooks available for people to experiment and try these out for themselves. Now, I had hoped to play a video at this point. Unfortunately, I have lost my mouse. There it is. Unfortunately, we had some issues with the GoToWebinar platform, so I'm not able to do that at present, but it's available on YouTube. So what I'm doing now is I'm just pasting the link in the chat now so you can have a look at it later, you know, perhaps open it up. I'm sure you might have seen me if you were on the call at the beginning digging up that link. But hopefully we can circulate that to you afterwards as well. What the video describes is the GraphQL API, which has just in the last few weeks had a production release, which and what it does is it's the main sort of engine behind this PID graph, and it allows you to ask all of these questions that I was describing and answer them and get the answers. So if you want to find out more about it, there is a load of information about it on the PID forum. And they even have, if you go to the PID graph category, which is fairly obvious on the homepage on the left, you can go in and you can look at all these different user stories, and you can even see they're given all of the query that's that you need to enter in at this link, and then you can sort of play around with it yourself if you'd like. So one thing that the video also says is that the GraphQL API is very powerful and it has, you know, loads of capabilities within it, but it does still require a certain amount of technical know-how to use. As you could see there from the previous screen, you know, we have these queries, they're written in JSON, so they might be somewhat complicated. And but we have some more kind of end user focused services that are going to be coming on stream soon, which we're very excited about. So one of them is the common DOI search. So as you may be aware, we have, you know, DOIs are created by several registration agencies. So for publications, they tend to be created by Crossref, and then for data sets, they tend to be created by DataCite. And there are various other registration agencies. And we are working on building a common DOI search, so where you can search for any DOI regardless of where it was registered, and you should be able to find the metadata about it. It may also include other types of identifiers, so things like ORCIDs and ROAR IDs for organizations, which we've done an awful lot of work on within Freya. And it should hopefully, I think, be very useful for people. So it's going to be sort of an application that's based on this GraphQL API. And their work is starting on developing it at the moment, and it's due to be launched by the end of the project in November. At the moment, we are gathering feedback via the PID forum, and we're looking for people who are willing to test it. Before that as well, we had another service that DataCite are working on is the PID Services Registry. So that's going to be a registry of different types of services related to persistent identifiers, which are searchable. And again, it's an application of the GraphQL API. It should be launching next month, and all of the services within it are going to be assigned DOIs as well. And as I mentioned at the beginning, Freya is, because it's funded by the European Commission and it's part of the sort of foundation of building the European Open Science Cloud, it's going to be the services that are contained within this registry are going to be integrated into those catalogues as well. As I mentioned earlier, the British Library is one of the disciplinary partners within Freya, representing humanities and social sciences. And there's been a lot of work going on within all of the disciplinary partners, looking at how we can develop our own graphs of PID graphs as well. And we've been at the BL, we've been doing an awful lot of work with the shared research repository, particularly. And we are hoping to integrate or planning on integrating new types of persistent identifiers within the repository, sort of enhancing our support for organizational IDs, funder IDs, as well as others. So looking at these sort of different types of persistent identifiers so we get this full picture within our own systems as well. This is happening in other organisations as well. So, for example, Emble EBI, who represent the life sciences within Freya, they've been doing work with the Europe PMC platform, looking at versioning preprints as part of this as well. So I won't go too much into the other disciplinary applications, but we're going to be publishing some more information on the website very soon. So if you're interested in that, just check back on that in the next few weeks. Lastly, I wanted to highlight PIDforum.org. If you are interested in persistent identifiers, it's become quite a full platform of different lots of information about persistent identifiers and the developments within them. It's also a place, you know, it's run by the community, and you know, if you have any questions about persistent identifiers, you can ask them there. And, you know, if you, for example, are looking to implement RORA identifiers, so institutional, you know, organizational identifiers within your systems, which I know some UK institutions have already done. For example, Imperial have included RORA identifiers in their thesis metadata when creating DOIs. So, you know, you can look at that if you'd like. We also have a knowledge hub on that. It's one of the categories that go down the left here. And that has a lot of basic information about persistent identifiers as well. So if you are looking for some kind of beginner's guides, or if you would like to share that with any of your colleagues as well, please do check that out, and you can sign up if you'd like to post to it as well. So I think that was all I wanted to say. Does anyone have any questions?
We'll give you a minute or two, but I have a few questions in the meantime. What would you say is the number one thing, and I know there are a lot of librarians who have signed up for the webinar today, what is the number one thing you could do as a librarian or a repository manager to help?
As I mentioned earlier, I think the big thing, a lot of the things I've talked about and sort of some of the potential of the graph and this kind of rich network and discovering all these relationships, you know, some of these, to sort of realize that some of these things, you need to perhaps have technical developments and stuff to your systems, which may not be possible. But I think as librarians and repository managers, I think the best thing that you can do is try and ensure that, like, high metadata quality in the in any outputs that you are describing, either in your CRIS system or if you're working as a research data manager, publishing, helping researchers to publish their data, to try and ensure that you've got as much metadata as possible and as many persistent identifiers within that as you can. So, you know, try and make sure that you get all the ORCID IDs for the authors on outputs, things like that. You know, make sure it, try to encourage all your researchers to have ORCID IDs and to use them is also a very good step. So I think just, yeah, using persistent identifiers is, you know, it's only with that will any of the you know, that API is built on having the identifier. So until we have them all, you know, it's going, its coverage is going to be somewhat incomplete.
Brilliant, thanks for that. And then we have no other questions that are coming through apart from, will presentation slides be sent to participants? Yes, we will circulate the video. We'll also look to upload the PowerPoint at some point if we can to our repository, but we will certainly circulate a link to the video by email, hopefully tomorrow. And one other question from me before we go, if you don't mind, Frances.
Not at all.
Does Freya have any kind of preferred identifiers, or like a list of preferred identifiers? For example, what's the best kind of organizational ID or grant ID to use, or is it quite agnostic?
What we've found, we don't have any, in short, we don't have a preferred identifier. But if you are looking to try and make these decisions about, you know, choosing which identifier, very shortly, hopefully tomorrow, in fact, we will be publishing some short guides to try and help people who want to use persistent identifiers choose which identifier to use and sort of some of the things you might want to consider when making that decision. I think it's fair to say that a lot of these identifiers have come out of different, you know, they were designed with different use cases in mind. And that means that they sort of have pros and cons, each of them. So we've done a lot of work looking into that. So hope we also have loads of reports if you want kind of a longer read on them as well. They're available on the Freya website. But yeah, actually, I will circulate the, it would be great, Dom, as well, if we could circulate a link to those their decision trees effectively, but we can circulate a link to those as well with the recording too.
Great. And actually two other questions have come through as we were talking. Mm-hmm. Have you considered PIDs for archive collections?
For archive collections, we've looked at some of this, yes. We conducted a survey early on in the project of persistent identifier use across various different types of entities, and there was one part of that looking at cultural artifacts, so looking at things like ARC identifiers and URIs. I would say that Freya hasn't looked at this hugely, but that there is some other work going on with which the British Library is involved, which will be looking at this in more detail. So stay tuned, I think is the answer there.
And then I think we've got time for one more. So in regards to PhD theses, what kind of persistent identifier should we think about? DOIs, ORCIDs, anything else?
DOIs, definitely, where possible. And yeah, I think trying to get ORCID identifiers, both for students and supervisors, if possible. I know that, you know, sometimes repository systems don't necessarily have the capabilities to manage those sorts of relationships, but if you can, that would be great. And I think institutional identifiers, grant identifiers, you know, you can definitely build a very rich picture with e-theses if you can, but they'd be the main ones.